This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Stop the press. We've got late breaking news in this episode. It's about a discovery that's been all over the media this week, and it comes from the world of pulsars. So to tell us about it, we've got Dr. Ben Stappers of the Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics here in Manchester, and Lena Levin, who's a PhD student at Swinburne University in Melbourne, Australia. So I thought I'd start with Lena, and can you tell us what it is that's been discovered and why it's attracted so much attention?
So we've discovered this pulsar binary system that has a companion that is very light. Its mass is just a little bit more heavier than Jupiter's, and the size of it is so small that the density of the planet would be very high, and we think it's is made out of carbon, which then would mean that high density and the pressure on the planet would mean that the planet would be made of diamond. It's crystallized matter in the core of the planet.
Okay. Well, immediately I can see why it's attracted that attention then. Because with a sort of astrophysicist cap on, I heard a dense companion of a pulsar, and with a kind of media hat on, I heard blah, 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 diamond planet. So I'm guessing that's why it's been all over the press. So you're studying in Australia.
Yes.
How is it that we kind of got this sort of joint discovery, UK here and Australia?
So we're doing a pulsar survey with the Parkes telescope in Australia. And it's a joint collaboration between astronomers in Australia, in the UK, in Germany, and in the US. So we've been searching for pulsars in the southern sky, and we found this one pulsar system within the survey that we're doing.
So this system is not like any of the others that you've found then, or that have been found in previous surveys, really. I mean, I know some planets have been found around pulsars before. So let's sort of try and establish like how this system formed. You've got a pulsar. How does it end up with this thing around it that's sort of like a planet, but seems to be a bit denser?
The theory of how a millisecond pulsar forms is that it starts out with a binary system with a pulsar and another massive star. The other star evolves, it grows, and the pulsar will start accreting matter from the other star. And with this matter, when it's accreted onto the pulsar, it spins up.
So it's sort of feeding off it then?
Yes.
So in that case, let's say that the other star has had a lot of its matter accreted. What's then left at the end? How have you ended up with the thing that's there now?
So what we think happens is that the mass transfer from the companion star onto the pulsar, as Lena mentioned, it spins it up to these millisecond rotation rates. And it goes through a phase which we call an X-ray binary phase. And in that phase, we think that it's possible that the X-rays generated from the accretion process can also ablate the companion star. So basically, it's losing mass in two different ways. It's losing mass through its Roche lobe, or its inner Lagrangian point, onto the pulsar. But then there is also a wind coming off the pulsar that can actually blow the material off the companion star.
Okay.
And so what we think has probably happened in this system is that that process has almost come to mean that the companion star disappeared entirely. So the theory is that the formation of millisecond pulsars that are on their own, so they have no binary companion, in that process, the companion star got completely obliterated.
Mm-hmm.
We know of these systems called black widow pulsars, where there is a very low mass of the order of 0.025 solar masses object. And they cause eclipses, and the Black Widow name comes because the pulsar pretty much killed its companion star. But it didn't completely kill it in those systems, of course. And what we think is in this situation is that we have a very extreme version of that. So it was almost that this companion star was completely wiped out. And so all we're left with is this 1/1000th of a solar mass, or approximately a Jupiter mass, object orbiting the pulsar.
So the Roche lobe is telling us where the pulsar can take matter from the other object.
Yeah, it's basically an equipotential surface for gravity. So where gravity is equal between being attracted to the pulsar and being attracted to the companion star. And so if material crosses this Roche lobe, then it's more attracted to the pulsar than it is to the companion star, okay, or the planet in this case.
So what we've got with the companion is a white dwarf, or at least it was thought to have been a white dwarf. And they themselves are very dense and compact things. So if the pulsar is going to have been feeding off that, they must be very close together, I guess.
Yeah, so the system, the orbital period is just 2.2 hours. And the orbital separation is so small that it fits entirely inside the sun. So they are incredibly close by. And so the companion star has, you know, really felt the full force of the pulsar blasting away on it.
And then the thing that's left, I was having a little read, and it was a density of about 23 grams per cubic centimetre.
Yeah, that's a lower limit.
Okay, so it's 23 or more dense. And 1 gram per cubic centimetre is water. A normal white dwarf would be many, many times higher, something like a million. So this is something that's about twice as dense as lead, but as it's had its mass taken away, it seems to have become less dense. Does that sort of fit the picture of what's happened to it?
Yeah, indeed. We were actually just discussing this ourselves. As you mentioned, white dwarfs have this extreme density because they have this electron degeneracy pressure in the core, which is what supports them from collapsing any further. Mm-hmm. We're not at that sort of density. So as the mass has been stripped away, this thing has become, you know, significantly lower density object. Like I say, we only have a limit of this 23 because even though we know the radius of this object extremely well, we don't have a constraint on its mass until we know exactly what the inclination angle of the orbit is.
So whether it's edge on, yes, or face on to,
exactly,
us. Exactly. So then I'm trying to go again with the media angle of it kind of being diamond. I mean, if it's not degenerate, then it's obviously sort of in a normal form of matter. Would it be diamond as we would recognize it? Is it more dense than that? Could you mine it? I guess people would wonder.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. The issue we have is that we know that the white dwarf was a carbon-oxygen white dwarf. That's something we can work out from stellar evolution theory. And so we know that what's left behind is going to be predominantly carbon with some oxygen. And we know that if you put carbon under pressure and the high pressures, of course, you form diamond. What you get when you go to densities beyond diamond, that is a much more open question. But there is a working definition, apparently, which exists on a NASA webpage, which suggests that when you get any crystalline carbon structure, as far as we know, is going to be diamond-like. So that's the reason we christened this thing to be a diamond planet, to suggest that even if you could go there and come back, whether it's worth doing that and mining it is a moot question, really. And as we were discussing yesterday, probably by the time you get back, diamonds aren't even that precious anymore.
Okay. But it does seem to be quite an efficient way of compressing carbon and making diamonds, which is what people try and do on Earth, I know, and they only really get tiny ones, other than in geological processes.
Yes, exactly. In fact, if there was one nearby, then, you know, maybe that's an interesting thing. But yeah, it's not something that we've thought about too deeply.
No. So if it's at this sort of density that it is, about twice the density of lead, but not really degenerate, so not being supported by this electron degeneracy pressure anymore, what is it that's binding it now together at that density? Is it the gravity, or is that now too weak as its mass is lower?
Again, I think it's basically, it is a combination of the mass constricted within this this fixed radius, and so you've ended up with, as I think you were mentioning before, this crystalline structure. So it's the rigidity of the crystalline structure that's obviously giving its form, as opposed to anything else. I mean, it seems to be robust to the impinging pulsar wind now. The reason we know that is that it would be extremely unlikely that we were catching the system just as it was about to disappear. You could anticipate that at this very low mass, that the system is almost gone, right? If it was still being ablated, you're at the point of it disappearing. And that would be a very fluky thing that we found, because that episode in a lifetime of a millisecond pulsar, which lives for maybe a few billion years, the fact that you catch it in a very short phase when we only know about a couple of hundred of these objects, it's very unlikely that we would catch such a system. And so we believe it's in a stable situation now, which would suggest that, yes, therefore it is rigid. And the thing that you can imagine might be giving it its rigidity would be the crystalline nature of the structure. But I also should preface that by saying that I'm not a materials expert.
Well, probably neither are most of the people that wrote the article about it, but didn't stop them speculating.
That's true.
So you said it would have been very fluky to find it in a stage where it was on its way to being ablated, but clearly it's quite an unlikely system anyway, given that there's only been the one found. Do we know why the process of ablation or accretion stopped at that point and didn't go all the way to destroying it, or why it's such a rare kind of system?
So I think what we think happens is that there's a balance between the way that the material can flow onto the companion star is through this inner Lagrangian point of the Roche lobe, and of course as the pulsar gets spun up faster and faster, its wind becomes more powerful. So we think that what happens is that the rate at which mass is being accreted must drop, because the mass of the overall companion star is also dropping. And so you get a balance between the wind from the pulsar and the mass trying to fall through onto the pulsar. At that point, no more mass can basically accrete onto the system.
Right.
There are some other possibilities of how mass accretion at a much slower rate can occur. But that would basically mean the companion now will stay at that mass. Now, the big question is, and this has been the theory since the very early 80s, is that even after that point, the wind of the pulsar could potentially drive mass off the companion star. And we see that in the eclipsing binary systems that I was mentioning earlier, the Black Widow systems. We actually see evidence for material leaving the companion star. But it's not happening very fast. It's not happening at a rate which would destroy the companion in a Hubble time. And actually that's very unclear as to why it's so low, that loss of mass. And so we can understand why the mass transfer stops, but why the ablation stops or is less effective is not clear. But maybe all of these objects actually have this really dense crystalline core to them. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're just so well bound by crystalline forces that you just can't drive a wind off them anymore after a while.
Right. Well, just the last question I'll go to Lena for then. The actual survey that's been going on. I know there's been lots of surveys looking for pulsars in the past, but this one seems to have been quite successful. So could you tell us a bit about what it covers and how many pulsars it's found and so on?
Yeah, so we've now discovered 92 pulsars to date, and 20 of them are millisecond pulsars, which is a fairly big part of them that are millisecond pulsars. The other previous surveys have found more normal pulsars to millisecond pulsars. And the things that we are doing now that couldn't be done before is we use a higher sampling rate, and we have a wider bandwidth than previous surveys, because we're using a digital filter bank system instead of the old analog systems.
So you're more sensitive, and pick up those really fast rotating millisecond pulsars.
Yes, and the ones that are further away.
And maybe as a last question, how did you notice then that it had a companion object? I don't think that's something that we actually discussed before.
So by looking at pulsars, doing a lot of observations of the same pulsar, you can look at the times of arrival of each of the pulses of the pulsar. And by seeing little modulations in when the pulses arrive at the telescope, you can calculate the Doppler shift from the interactions with the companion.
Okay, so that sort of wobbling of the pulsar just gives it away.
Yes.
Well, that's really interesting to see formation scenario that maybe only would have been in theoretical before actually having been played out. So I hope you find a lot more interesting objects in that sort of zoo of pulsars. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.